This is the Real Estate Power Play Podcast, getting you the information that you need to be a successful real estate investor. Hosted by Mark Monroe, Ronnie Walker, Gabe Rodarte, and me, Marty Grisani. Combined, we've done thousands of real estate transactions. So get ready for real stories and true case studies on finding deals, growing portfolios, and making money. Welcome to the show.
Yo, everybody, come round, gather. We got a great show today. I am your host, Marty Grisani. Of course, my fellow co-hosts, Gabe Rodarte, Mark Monroe, Ronnie Walker. This is the Real Estate Power Play, and I'm really excited to talk with this individual. I learned a ton from some of the podcasts that he was recently on. Huge name in the industry, gigantic clients, probably one of the, I would say, the most in-depth interviews I've ever heard on how you can really build your business without having to do cold calling and direct mail. And all those things are important, but this way I like the most, and we're going to talk about what way that is in just a second, but everybody, welcome Brandon Bateman. Brandon, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hey, thank you so much, Marty. You're quite the hype man. People are going to be disappointed when they listen to this whole thing. Like, Marty made this out to be something better than it really is.
No, it's my job to ensure that we squeeze every ounce out of you. No, I am excited about this because I think, you know, a lot of our listeners are doing PPC. And guys, that's what we're talking about today is SEO, PPC. Actually, before we even get into that, for those who don't know who you are, and if they haven't listened to some of the podcasts you've been on, some big podcasts, Real Estate Disruptors, and he's got his own podcast. But go ahead, Brandon, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, great question. So essentially, what I am is I'm a data nerd that found digital marketing and somehow fell backwards into real estate. And that's kind of my niche of a niche, right, that I focus on. And what we do as a company is we help real estate investors to generate revenue through online marketing channels. And you mentioned a few of those already. There's three total that we really work with. There's PPC, like you're saying, the Google PPC. Everybody talks about it. There's the less often talked about SEO, but a lot of people don't know that there's just as many leads generated through there as there are through PPC. It's just it's just a different way. And it's kind of like a secret for a lot of investors. And then there's Facebook ads, which is, in my experience, a fantastic channel. All three of these channels kind of have their own strengths. What we do is we help investors build a strategy that surrounds those channels to bring in motivated seller leads so that they can scale their business through more inbound leads and not have to rely on other channels quite as much.
Excellent. Yeah. And I'm lucky because in this world, I come from a online advertising background. So before I became a full-time investor, So I realize I was an easy sell in regards to this and how important this is with, you know, well, my background was, you know, we did pay-per-click, we did Google reviews, right? All those things were huge back in 2010, 2011, search engine optimization, the backlinking to, you know, government websites and what that could do for your credibility and your authority online. So I knew right away that this was good. I would actually sell against PPC. I'd say, you know, what are you more inclined to do, Brandon? Are you more inclined to look at a paid ad or a local review? So, you know, we actually did both, right? That's really what you need to do is you want to make sure both are where you need to be. If you can, if you have a PPC, you can have a great ad. But if someone's doing a little bit more research on you, especially if you have a higher ticket item, right, that you're selling, well, they're going to read your reviews and you kind of need both to balance out. What is your thought on reviews actually with these Google business pages that people set up? Like, is that a big part of what you guys look at? Like, is that like, hey guys, you might want to make sure you're looking at that?
Yeah, I'd say absolutely. It's a big ranking factor for your Google My Business. So for anybody that's not familiar with this, you know, there's people searching on Google for ways to sell their house or whatever the case is, and you have a profile on Google, and there's probably going to be hundreds at least that are relevant to whatever that person is searching. And this is kind of the game of how do you make yours show up above somebody else's so that you can get that traffic. And reviews are a ranking signal for sure. And they seem to be a decently important ranking signal. So yeah, that's a tough one because we preach to our clients all day long. You gotta get a lot of reviews, but we can't really do that for you. Right. Because it's this isn't one of those industries. I mean, if you own an ice cream shop, right, you can just text every person that comes in and say, please leave me a review, and 1% of people will, and you'll get plenty of reviews. But in this real estate game, I mean, you could have a killer business. You could be absolutely killing it with 10 customers every month. So, and that's ultimately just not that many reviews. So review generation in this industry is hard because it's like part of the sales process. You have to like work hard for those. You don't just like send a text and hope that they do it, right? You gotta work a little bit harder on that. And if you do all of that, then it does differentiate you, both from the standpoint, like a lot of people think this is just what's going to make me look different than my competitors. I have 50 reviews, they have 20. So people trust us more. And there's an element of that. But what people don't also realize is the more reviews you have, the more people you will even get in front of to potentially convince that you are better than your competitors, because it tells Google's algorithm that you deserve to be at the top.
Yeah, that's the thing with the Google reviews is the differentiator, right? The branding, the SEO. And I'm a bias. I think you need to have Google reviews, and we've done a pretty good job. And, you know, you want to have them everywhere and not just Google, right? So you really, and in the review, you really want content, not this guy's a good, you know, this is a good company or Marty's a good guy. It's like, hey, during my foreclosure process, they were able, or hey, during this time where, you know, so-and-so had passed away, we had to, you know, they walked us through the probate situation. And then, and now that review is like the selling point. Now that's the third party story that, you know, is actually going to be the reason why they pick up the phone and call you. Because, you know, yeah, there could be a lot of paid ads, but when you're looking at the reviews themselves are the difference maker. And again, I come from that world. And so maybe I've been sold on it so hard because I had so much conviction when I was selling the product. So I could be a little nutty here, but I also think a big thing is also the video reviews that are going to be coming down the line if there haven't already been happening. There were talks about it. Anyway, we're not really here to talk about reviews, although they are important, like you said. We're here to talk about where people can really separate themselves through, you know, not just the Google ads. Now, Facebook ads, when you were talking about this, you were saying that this has really become one of the more important avenues. Can you talk a little bit more on, so like, is it just Facebook? I mean, Instagram, is it TikTok? Like, give us a little background on where your thoughts are for 2023 and beyond.
Oh, good question. I mean, beyond, I feel like we're walking through fog in this industry in general, right? Like I could say maybe what happens next month, 2 years from right. now, harder, yep. right? Unless we're talking really macro level. But like from a platform standpoint, it's really going to be about where are your customers and mm-hmm. also the targetability of those customers. Because, I mean, you could say there's not that many motivated sellers on TikTok. Probably true. But if you know how to find the ones who are there, then what does it matter, right? Because you don't have to spend your money on everybody. You can just spend your money on the right people. But as for right now, like the staple for social media advertising is definitely going to be Facebook and Instagram, with an emphasis on Facebook. Instagram, our clients do get deals from Instagram. It's kind of that concept of it's about targeting motivated sellers. And at the end of the day, we don't care where they are. It's about the person more so than the platform. So while Instagram skews away from motivated sellers, if they are there, we'll reach them. We don't have any problem with that. So anyways, the name of the game with Facebook, it's a little bit less popular of a channel, and in some ways, rightfully so. And in other ways, it's kind of overlooked. The real advantage to Facebook is that the leads are cheaper than they are through Google pay-per-click, for example. And the quality, it highly depends on how you do the campaigns. I talk to so many people that are just like, I can't handle another Facebook lead. Those are such junk. But there's also different ways to generate Facebook leads, right? You could have them like fill out these forms on Facebook that typically generates a pretty low lead quality. Or you could have like a really heavily qualifying ad, taking them to a heavily qualifying landing page, asking them for a lot of information. And that's going to bring your lead quality up pretty significantly. So what we've seen over the past year is that the gap between the Facebook and PPC lead quality is actually closing a little bit. Facebook leads, we've been getting better and better quality. But it is true that, like, if I had to choose a channel for most investors right now, it would be PPC over Facebook if you can't afford to do both. And the reason being, the lead quality still is better. The cost has gone down a ton with the market shift, and the volume is going up. There's more people going to Google to search versus with Facebook, the cost has gone up with the ad platform rates going up. And even though the quality is better, it seems to be that our clients are on average getting a similar cost per deal with Facebook compared to PPC, but they have to sift through a few more leads to make it happen on Facebook versus with PPC. Those deals are a little bit easier to come by, like within your lead pool. So anyways, but it highly depends per market. So my advice for clients when they're talking about paid ads, if someone's just choosing a single channel right now, unless you're in a market where we know something that is different than the norm, I think I'd go PPC. But if you can't afford to do PPC and Facebook, that's my preferred strategy. Our clients on average will do better with that, and you can kind of reallocate the budgets according to what's working better.
Yeah, I love that. I like that. That's the preferred ways. If you can, go both. And but if not, then still, you know, Google is king here with PPC. And it, you know, you said something very interesting in one of the shows that, I mean, it makes total sense, but it's still like, still makes you go, yeah, that makes sense. And of course that's going to happen. But, you know, the faster you can react to these leads, the better you're going to be, right? I think people like will get the lead. They might look at it. They're analyzing it. They're doing all these things besides calling it, right? And you had mentioned that the data is significant of, you know, the longer you wait on these things, even if it doesn't look like a slam dunk lead, the reality is that you're going to miss out on that. Can you speak a little bit to that? Like, can you talk a little bit about, hey, you know, the bigger and the, well, the most successful companies are the ones that are just getting on the phone right away and talking to it. Am I wrong for that? Am I picking up the right thing there?
Yeah, you're kind of touching on like two separate principles that we share with our clients that are true for converting these leads really well. And like some context for you, I've never been in a motivated seller's house before. I've never negotiated real estate, right? So I'm looking at this very much from like an operational standpoint. And not necessarily like you'll find people who will teach you on like tonality and how to speak to the subconscious and like, you know, how to run an appointment, like all those things. Like, I don't know anything about that. But what I do know is our clients, like, it's kind of like those things like 90% of people think they're better than 50% of drivers. And yeah, they're not actually, like, that's kind of acquisition, right? And rightfully so, because I mean, if you're ever going to have the best team, you're going to have to believe that they're the best team, right? So that's an important thing. But the, you know, despite most of our clients generally thinking like they've got it nailed down with acquisitions, there's a huge variety in how well they close. So we took our top 10% of closers and we saw like, what are all the things that all those people are doing in common? And none of the people who aren't closing well are doing. Right. So we kind of like saw like what are the real things that are making a difference? Because too much stuff in this industry, I think, is just like, oh, this person said that this works well for them and that person said that works well for them. But this is kind of like what do they have in common, right? So it's a little bit more predictive of, you know, if you do these things, then it's like that you have success. And two really big ones there. The first one's urgency. And the advice that we give our clients is you want to get to leads within 60 seconds. Our clients that get to leads within 60 seconds, their contact rates are way, way higher. They're much more likely to make contact with the seller. But then beyond that, even if they get an opportunity, the opportunity to contract rates are way, way higher if they got in touch with the seller more quickly. Mm. There's tons of different you know, hypotheses. My personal hypothesis is that the sale is really won at the beginning, not necessarily when it's closed.
Right. And
you've done this before, I'm sure, like you're evaluating like different products and stuff like that. And at the beginning, you kind of make an emotional decision in your brain that like, I really like this one. This is the one that I'm going to buy. And then like the logical part of you has to like look at other options, but you're still thinking in your head, you're still comparing to that initial thing. You're still kind of basically trying to find reasons to prove that you're right about wanting to go that one direction. The same thing can happen with sellers. And they, you know, so it's about like making that good first impression, making it right away. And then the other thing is competition. If you get in touch with that person, let's just say they're just calling down a big list of investors, which happens sometimes with PPC. If you're early in there and you get a hold of them and you can actually stop their process, right? Maybe they're going to reach out to five people. You're number two. Because you called them, they answered the phone. And because you made them feel like you're going to take care of them. And because that pain that they had, you actually made it feel like that pain was gone. Because even though like you haven't officially bought their house, they have so much belief that you're going to be their guy that they don't have to continue the search. Now it's still like an opportunity. However, it's an opportunity with two investors that have the lead, not five investors that have the lead, right? So that's where speed cuts out competition, which makes bigger spreads. It also increases the likelihood that you're the person they sell to. So speed is huge. But the thing that kind of goes along with that, that people get wrong sometimes, is sometimes they'll be fast, but they disqualify leads. And this is really common with companies that are used to like a lot of texting, cold calling, that kind of stuff, where you're, the way you run your whole business, the whole game is just how do I like sift through this big pile of leads and find something that's good.
Right.
So the mindset is very much assume that a lead is unmotivated until you can prove that it is motivated.
Right.
Versus our clients that are doing best with PPC, they assume that every lead is hot until you can prove that it isn't. And it's just the, you know, it's a different mindset. So if you're running in person, it means like, you know, if the person has a house to sell and they say they want to sell it in the next 90 days, it means you go on the appointment, right? You don't think like, okay, well, where are you on price?
Like yeah.
The story when you go on the appointment is different. And if it's, you know, if it's on the phone, then it could just be like progressing through the sales process a little bit differently and making sure that you spend a lot of time with people before you jump into the pricing discussion and all that kind of stuff. So it's like those two kind of go together. But yeah, it's urgency and assuming motivation. Those are like the two really important differentiators. There's one more technically, if we want to get into that, but those are the ones that you kind of alluded to that are making a big difference for our clients.
Yeah. And it's interesting because it's like, it's still work, right? Like you still have to do the work of picking up the phone and calling it. And that's just really interesting. You said 60 seconds as soon as it comes in, but it makes sense because they are going to, not every one of them, but a lot of them are going to go and click on a bunch of other ones and, you know, fill out the form or whatever. And if you're the first one and you can make a good impression and you can separate yourself, then you have a better chance. And then but it's funny because our company is heavy cold call, heavy texting. And you want to look at you, when you look at those leads, you go, okay, like, prove it that you are motivated. And then that does subconsciously go into the web leads too, but those are our best converting leads, right? We spend the most, but probably ROI and effort and time, they're definitely the best in regards to that. So, but yeah, we need to do a better job as a company of when we see those come in to approach them differently. And I, you know, I've never thought of that. So I appreciate that a lot. What's the third?
The third is it. And I kind of alluded to it a little bit. It's about creating a quality first impression. The specific data point that this came from is our clients that have a lead go directly to an acquisitions manager. They had a much better close rate than when they had to go directly to a lead manager. So
interesting.
Now it's not necessarily black and white, right? Because there's different qualities of lead managers. You have everything from like the VA reading a script to the person right. That could be an acquisitions manager, but they're managing leads instead. So that's where that's where I want to kind of bring it to the principle more so than that specific data point that like generated the initial insight. It really is just about like a lot of people think that first touch is the least valuable and it's just about weeding through. And I think we have to think about it completely differently. It's my opinion. Like you've heard this methodology before, like looking at the business and, you know, what are the $10 an hour activities that we do? What are the $100 activities, the $1,000 activities? I think like when you have like PPC or an SEO lead come in, that first call that you make to that person in the first 2 minutes where you create an impression on that person, I think that there's very few activities in the business that have a higher dollar value per hour than that moment. Yet you find far too many people that pay the person who makes that call less than they pay their janitor, which is the lowest value activity.
Well, to your point, I'm the only one that takes those. Mm-hmm. I'm the only one that does our website and pay-per-click leads. I'm going to be the one that's, you know, going to either blow that or convert that. Now, after my initial couple calls, if, you know, I can't get a hold of them, then I might pass it off. But that's exactly. That's mine. That's my responsibility. And that's like, you know, we love those. Those are you didn't catch the reference on the Disruptor show, but the Glengarry, Glenn Ross, those are the Glengarry leads. And those are for me and me only. And maybe my partner, Matt, if he's, if he's around, maybe I'll throw him a bone on that. All right. So I got a couple questions that are specific to my business. Cause guess what? This is my show today. These guys aren't here. So let's talk about me. That's what's the most important right now.
All right. So, let's do it.
Okay. You said something that was really interesting about some unique, or maybe you didn't say it, but it came up in some unique titling and maybe it's called copyright, I guess, with these ads. What have you seen that's been unique, that's really caught people's attention? Like I saw this, you had mentioned, pay off debt now, or, not just sell house fast, or have you seen anything, or is it really, hey guys, the basics work, stick to the script.
Yeah, it's so it's going to depend on your channel. On Facebook, you can be a little bit more creative because people don't have like a specific mindset they're in before they get to your ad. PPC is the place where there's like copywriting like geniuses out there who like brand themselves like that, and they like write all these ads that are like creative, and then you bring it up in a boardroom and all the people in the board are like, wow, yeah, that sounds good. And like it's good at that stuff. But the problem with creativity is it requires more cognitive resources to understand. Mm. So you can't initially like draw that line, right? So that's where we have to understand, like when someone sees our ad, how many cognitive resources are they going to have to dedicate to that and to understanding that? And that's where in pay-per-click, it just doesn't leave quite as much room for creativity as you have in other channels. Because if I search for this thing, the easiest thing to happen is for me to see an ad that very clearly says like, we have that thing. Right. It could say it like more creatively, but then I might not catch it. Right. Because the average person to make it a Google search, picture they have a few drinks in them and they're also driving a car at the same time. And they're trying to do this Google search and they're just trying to find the answer. Because like people, when they go through these kinds of actions, they don't like necessarily dedicate as much time towards thinking about it as you might as a business owner thinking about how your ads are written. So it kind of is with like Facebook, you can be a little bit more creative, but with PPC, it really is kind of the basics that make a pretty big difference. But there are some basics that I think are heavily overlooked. The first one is that you need to both qualify with what you say and convert. Everybody thinks about convert. You want the thing that people are going to click on. It's pay-per-click advertising. So you don't want to say something that attracts the wrong kind of person. Where people go wrong with this is in their ad, they say like, we'll pay top dollar or something. And then I ask them, like, do you pay top dollar? And they're like, no, definitely not. Like, as a real estate wholesaler, that's literally the thing that you're worst at. You do everything awesome except for that. So, and then they complain when I'm doing these audits and I'm talking to them about their advertising performance for like people that aren't working with us. They complain like, oh, but all these leads are retail. They all want top dollar. And you look at the ad and it says like, we pay top dollar. Like, well, what do you expect, right? You attract those people. So that's one of the things that's a basic and that some people get wrong. But in general, it's I'd say really just it's about making it so people can draw the connection between like this company can actually help me as easily as possible. It's just got to be like mindless, if that makes sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. Actually, that was a great aha moment I just had. And which is like, we want to be sleek and think differently. But the problem is, like you were saying, that the people don't have that ability because, they're in their lizard brain. They're in fear right now, normally, when they're reaching out, right? So they don't have the luxury to think differently. And they just need what they need. And that makes perfect sense. So it really kind of like doubles down to just stick to the basics. It really is. Now, but making sure that you're tailoring it the right way, like, pay the most, like that makes total sense. But, do what it is that you do and make sure that it's out there and clear to them, but also it's not going against your, underlying principles of your business. So that's really good. I'm glad you said that. Okay. More questions for me and me only. How does this work with commercial real estate? Do you see that ever kind of parlaying? Does this work at all? Like, you know, when we think residential, it's more of motivation. You don't really get too much of that, at least in my opinion, in my experience in commercial. Do people use this with apartment buildings or, you know, industrial buildings? And again, this is specific to me as I'm pivoting more into commercial.
So the answer, I mean, all marketing works. The question is how well it works, right? That's kind of the name of the game. And I think for commercial, there's probably channels that are better fit. However, I do have clients that have gotten commercial contracts from campaigns that we ran for commercial stuff. Here's the tricky part. So naturally, those people are a little bit more savvy. They're a little bit less likely to find whoever they're going to work with on Google. And there's way less of them. So with that, there's just less volume.
Yep.
But remember, it's pay-per-click advertising, right? So you only got to pay like once they're there. So then the real constraint with that is if you're kind of too narrow geographically, there just might not be very much money that could be spent on it versus if you're more flexible, wider geographically, you could do better. There's also like a lot of people care, like they say, I want apartment complexes, but I only want 100 plus units or 25 right. to 35 units. Like nobody searches like how to sell my 76 unit apartment building
right.
on Google, right? So the kind of lead that you get is just going to vary a ton. And then the other thing that's really tricky is it varies a ton from a location standpoint, because you can't target on Google based on where someone's property that they own is. You can only target based on where they are. So I could be here in Utah, where I live, but I likely own real estate in Indianapolis,
right?
For example. Great very, point. Very common for yep. commercial.
Yep.
So that's where like controlling the leads from a geographic or a type of property standpoint is really hard. So the only company I think that could really work with would be someone who's like wants commercial leads, but they're just really flexible about the property type. They're really flexible about the locations of those properties. If that's you, then you might be able to make it work. But a lot of people are just looking for like 50 plus units in one of these three cities or something. And it's kind of like, it's not like you won't get those leads, but you know, it might not work if you're going to throw away a lot of good leads that just don't, they're just not quite your flavor.
Makes perfect sense. It's perfect. And the only way I thought this could probably work, Brandon, is with Facebook. Like, you know, you get you get like a business owner in like a group, like a Facebook group, who is looking to sell their business, and they're inside of an office building. And so now that they own, you know, so something along those lines, or like maybe even, again, it's not clear. It's not as concise and clear as need to sell my house fast, which, you know, that person who they are and what they need to do, you kind of have to get super creative, which may just be a waste of time and money. And but maybe not. Maybe if you can really hone it in, you might be onto something that's really, really good. I don't know. But anyway, that's another question. So, okay. Moving on. You know, you mentioned something. How can I stop? I don't feel like this is happening a ton, but I think it does happen. How do you get people to stop competition or people from clicking on your ad?
Ooh, good question. I apologize in advance. I feel like every question you ask me, I give you like way longer of an answer than you probably bargained for.
No, it's fantastic.
You know, there's a few layers to this, right? So if you're a nerd too, you might be interested. If anybody Absolutely. Falls asleep, I'm sorry. But there's two different types of what you're describing. What you're describing is click fraud. And a lot of people don't know click fraud is one of the largest organized crime categories in the world, close to drugs and human trafficking. It's very, very popular, and a lot of people make a lot of money from click fraud. But there's two types, right? There's kind of like my angry competitor down the street, and there's actual like sophisticated click fraud operations that are profiting from you, and they get blocked in different ways. So click fraud operations, these are the most dangerous, and you can get a ton of leads from them. And I see this all the time, that people are getting hammered by this in their PPC. And the way it usually looks is you get all these leads come in, and the phone numbers, the result is exactly what would happen if you just submitted a bunch of random phone numbers. Some of them don't work. Some of them are people who answer the phone. They say they have no idea who you are or why you're calling.
Right.
Them.
Yes.
It's just, you're just given a list of random phone numbers basically and random addresses. And the way to avoid this is you have to remove the incentive for the people doing fraud. Because the reason people do fraud is they want to make money. The way that they make money is they're trying to sell advertising inventory. So if I have a website where I sell ad inventory and I can fake or simulate people coming there and seeing and clicking on their ad inventory, then I can make money from fake people. And so the only way for that to work, that doesn't happen on Google proper or on Facebook proper. That all happens on affiliated places. Facebook has something called Audience Network. It's a place where there's other, you know, they sell inventory from other apps that aren't Facebook itself. Google has something called Search Partners, where they sell inventory from other search engines that aren't Google itself. And in there, because there's incentive for fraud, because Google pays them for that inventory, they have strong incentive to fake that inventory. Wow. And that's so that's where staying away from those places can decrease your number of fraud leads pretty significantly, because they're sophisticated. So like a lot of the fraud blocking softwares and stuff, what they do is they block IP addresses that are proven to be fraud, but you can only block the second IP. You can only block it after you've already seen it and identified it as fraud, and they'll change IP addresses constantly. So that's it's an endless game. Like you block the IP and then, you block the IP and then new IP, and it doesn't help. So that's number one. That's number one type of fraud. Number two is angry competitor down the street. That's where IP blocking does work, because they're not usually sophisticated enough. And they could have incentive even within Google proper, for example, because they just want to waste your money if they want to take you down.
Right.
So that's where for those kinds of people, you can block their IP addresses. And we use softwares that'll automatically block their IP addresses if they detect that kind of behavior.
Interesting. And
that helps.
Okay. I like that. I didn't know that the fraud thing is like the biggest money maker. I think that's insane, but it makes sense. I mean, if you can make money and you know, people are going to find a way to do it. And typically not, unfortunately not the most credible way. Okay. So these are some questions for you. Does your company rely on the clients to provide the feedback on which leads converted? How do you guys know that information?
We do rely on them. So you're probably asking because you've heard me like share numbers of like, this is what our clients are doing on average or.
Yeah. I'm bouncing around and going. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So we have systems that we give them where basically they can report to us what happened with the leads. And we use that information to be able to know like who's converting well, who's not. Help identify problems in their sales processes, help train Google's algorithm on how to find better leads. Like we use that for all that kind of stuff. As you can imagine or are potentially alluding to, it's not a perfect system because it relies on them reporting it to us, and people report bad quality information and they don't report information. So we have to make some assumptions sometimes where like if someone, you know, if client A has 100 leads and has, or if our clients on average that get 100 leads, they do 10 deals. And we have a client that had 100 leads, but they didn't tell us how many deals they did. We just assume they did 10, right? So we can just like kind of take the sample that we have and just extrapolate it to the rest. That's how we can get aggregate numbers. And we do some prediction based on that. Like, you know, if they fill out the form this way, then they might be more likely to be a deal or less likely. And, you know, so it's kind of like adjusted to our measures of quality of lead. So basically, have you ever seen it's funny, one of my employees said this one day and I just like, it clicked. You seen Jurassic Park? Where they have the part where they're like engineering the DNA and they have like some pieces of the DNA, but then they like put in the lizard DNA or whatever it is to kind of like fill in the gaps to create these dinosaurs.
Yes, 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 yes.
That's literally how we do data management, right? We have those known data points, like what our clients have reported to us. And then we kind of just have to like simulate the rest of the data to make it a full DNA strand. And it kind of works.
Okay. Hey, I mean, it's got to get done. And listen, it's the majority of it is there. And it's like, it's what's important. It's going to point us in the right direction. That's what we're looking to do. This is a science, but you know, there's work that needs to be done continuously. I mean, you are like an archaeologist. You got to dust off a lot of stuff to understand what it is that we're looking at, because it's every market's different. Every lead can be different. And was it on the sales team or, you know, so yeah, 100%. So these are some questions from my ad person, that helps me. And, but he goes, do you only need to give Google the Google click ID? The GC lid, I have no idea what that is, or do you need to also feed it to UTM parameters?
Yeah, so this is like, this is, I'll explain like the situation for everybody listening.
Just yeah, go ahead. Because I'm doing a terrible job of like giving like the macro on this. I'm just going specifically to what this person needs.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough. And so let's explain how this works. So there's from ad platforms, you can make it so in the URL stream, there's information contained there. So if my website is brandonbuyshouses.com, then I might link to brandonbuyshouses.com/?, and then insert some parameters like GCLID, GCLID is what some people call it, Google Click ID equals, and then this. And then I could say like UTM source equals this. It's like, you know, where's the source of this? The keyword is this, et cetera. And then you can pull that information from the URL. It wouldn't change what the page looks like, but you can pull that information from the URL as data in with your leads. So the trick is, the way that we do this whole reporting to feed Google information, what we do is we take this click ID for Google and we capture it with the lead. And then we figure out what happens with the lead. And then we report it back to Google and we say, here's that click ID, so they can match it in their system and figure out which person that was. And then here's what they ended up doing. So we said, tell them, like, was it a qualified lead? Was it a deal? Was it an opportunity? Like, what does this mean? And then Google uses that information to optimize. So for that whole, like, it's called end-to-end tracking, all the way from the point, because what most people do is all they do is they track what generates leads. Something right. that we do uniquely that none of our competitors do is we track all the way end-to-end what generates deals. But that's hard because you have to kind of, you have to take the information from your systems and you have to feed it into Google. But you do that through that click ID. That's how Google connects the specific action. So what this person was asking is, well, if they know that you have to use a click ID, what about the other parameters? The answer is we just use all parameters. Like, we'll pull in the keyword and the ad group and the campaign and like all this stuff that exists in Google. But Google doesn't need that. Google, all it needs is a click ID. But on our side, we like to be able to break things down by that other stuff to be able to analyze things outside of Google. So anyways, that's kind of our approach. But the reason we still have to bring it into Google is because you can't get the data. You can't get all the data out of Google into your other systems, but you can get all the data from your other systems into Google. So if you want to analyze a lot of different aspects of your campaign to see how they're affecting lead quality and stuff like that, or optimize for the algorithm, you need to pull your data into Google, not the other way around. So we do it both ways, and we'll analyze some things in either direction, just like depending on what's easier. But the one non-negotiable one is that you want to bring all of your data into Google.
Yeah, so we just hit the nerding out hour right there. You know what I mean? That's where you really go into the nerd out. So people that are doing this maybe on their own or, you know, the reality is you shouldn't, I don't think. And you should hire somebody. And if you're going to hire somebody, hire the Bateman Collective. You know, if you're doing anywhere, you know, minimum around 3,000 to 5,000 a month, you guys would, you know, like to talk to somebody that's doing something like that. Is that about right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's
minimum.
Nailed it. Three grand a month is our floor.
Okay. So, and that's, you know, that's about where you need to be to even kind of make, you know, to really make an impact. So next question, as we go down here, let's continue on the nerd out. So have you experimented with importing offline conversions back into Google to optimize the bid strategies? And if so, how does this work? And if you want to, you can do your whole, like, before why this question has been asked and go into the answer.
Yeah, so I think what they're talking about is, do you fuel Google's it's like hard to do the, like, let's backpedal and explain what this is.
I'm not really doing a great job of helping you with this, but you are adding value, which is why you're here.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. That's all right. I got it. I figured out how to make this make sense. I'm gonna try to bring this I don't know if you've seen The Office, where it's like one of my favorite TV shows.
And absolutely.
Where Michael's like, explain it to me like I'm 9. And then the guy's
like, yeah.
Now explain it like I'm 5.
Yeah.
It goes another step. I'm going to try to skip straight to 5.
Thank you.
But the, so what a lot of people don't understand about this, like, so much of marketing is the marketer, like, brute forcing an ROI out of the channel because they see, hey, this works in this way, that works in that way. We're going to push this forward in this way. We're going to find that this keyword has a better lead quality, so we remove the other one and we double down on that one. But here's the really interesting thing about Google is they have tens of thousands of data points per user. And a lot of that's very predictive of if someone's going to be a motivated seller or not. And you can't see that. So turns out Google's algorithm is smarter at finding motivated sellers than you are, provided it has the right kind of information. A lot of people think of AI like it's this like super intelligent thing. The only thing that AI does better than humans is it can learn, and it can learn infinitely. So let's just assume your targeting is going to be done by AI, which these days pretty much non-negotiable for a large chunk of it to be done that way in your bidding. That's when we're talking about these bid strategies. Assuming that's going to happen, there's only two ways that you can make that AI smarter. You feed it more data, or you feed it better quality data. And through that, it could become smarter than it would be otherwise, because this AI is just, it's so dumb if you feed it the wrong information, right?
Right.
It's not like it has sense or it's like super smart or something like that. Google's AI is like people look at like ChatGPT, for example, super popular now, and they're like, oh, it's like super smart thing. It's because it's been trained. Ask it about anything that happened after 2021. See how smart it is. It doesn't know that, right? So that's a pre-trained model. Google's models are untrained until you train them. So it's literally your responsibility to communicate to this computer what is a motivated seller. And the way that it does that is it does it the same way that humans do. When we're exposed to things, like a little child, right? How do they know that a school bus is yellow? It's because they've seen enough things and had somebody say that's yellow, and they've started to realize the trend between those things. So you take it, and now this computer knows tens of thousands of things on each person. And what you have to give it is experience data. You have to show it this thing happened and it meant this. And then it starts to slowly learn, and it starts to understand what is a motivated seller, and it starts to be able to shape that persona. And then it bids according to that. So if it matches really closely to that, then it would bid. It goes into this auction and it might say, I'm willing to pay $100 for that click. And if it doesn't match it very closely, then it might say, I'm willing to pay $5 for that click, because the probability of that being the person that we want is lower. So that's kind of how this whole thing works. So the way that you feed it that data is through conversion tracking. It's what do you tell, basically Google's looking for you to tell it when it wins, right? And the way people usually do that is just every time we get a lead, we fire a little piece of JavaScript and we tell Google, good job, you got us a lead. What we're talking about here is maybe even having that reporting be not just based on those things that happen online, but have it be based on opportunities or appointments or contracts. And that can work, but there's some pitfalls. The data needs to come back fast, right? So that's where if you do deals and it takes a long time, then it's not frequent enough data for Google to know. You also have to have the sufficient sample size. And the fact of the matter is everybody says like, okay, we're going to do deals, we're going to do contracts or something like that. But nobody has enough data to feed Google their contracts. It's because if Google has these tens of thousands of data points and you just feed it three things a month and you say like, okay, those were the ones we want.
Right.
It's not enough for it to like really see what's unique about those people.
Right.
So that's where you can do it based on offline actions. But if you do, you want to keep it upper funnel, more like opportunity focused, unless you have just, I mean, if somebody's listening to this who's spending $1 million a month on ads, then different story, right? But for like the average mortal person, then you need to keep it a little bit higher funnel. And then the other thing that you can do is you can afford like variable value based on those things. I'm actually super excited about that. We're doing a lot of experimenting with that now. But there's a good in between here that I actually really like. And it's something called lead sculpting. And it gets you immediate feedback for Google, and it's better than just the standard conversion feedback that happens immediately. But it's not quite all the way to these offline actions. And the way that lead sculpting works, I guess we have to like know like what the principle of sculpting is. There's a quote from, I think it's Michelangelo, where he talks about like the marble, and basically says like that beautiful statue that was always there, right? I just had to remove the excess. That's the same principle of lead sculpting. It's kind of like you have this big block of leads, right? That's your marble. And you kind of chisel off all the stuff that like you know for sure isn't good. And then you only report the stuff that is good to Google. The way that it works is when someone fills out your form, you take them through a process where you ask them questions. Depending on how they answer those questions, then you choose if you want to report the lead or not to Google. A really good example of this that's super straightforward and easy to understand is you might ask someone, is your property listed on the market or not? If they say, yes, my property is listed on the market, then you choose not to report that lead to Google. If they say, no, it's not listed on the market, then you choose, yes, I do want to report that lead to Google. And in doing so, instead of just telling Google every single time you get a lead, and then its algorithm starts to learn that and it starts to find more people on market, now you're only telling it when someone's off market. So the algorithm's better understanding what exactly you're looking for. And just through that one effort, we saw a 27% increase in lead quality across our clients, just by giving better quality feedback about like, this is what we actually want. And those, even though a lot of people count them as leads, they're not really leads to us.
It's really interesting. The amount of passion you have for that, for this industry is really incredible, because, you know, it takes a different brain to really love this stuff. Right. But I bet a lot of the reason why you have that passion is because you've seen how your clients have won, you know, working with you. And I bet that gives you just so much more conviction. Obviously you already know how important this is, but just seeing the wins that your clients are getting has got to be very, very empowering.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's we invited some of our clients to come out skiing with us here in Utah. So I was hanging out with a few of them yesterday, and it meant a ton to me. I remember, like, one of them said, like, SEO literally saved his business, because where marketing channels got tough and he had a hard cash flow issue, SEO, because he had invested in it for so long, just provided like a consistent lead flow that he didn't really have to pay that much money for. And it literally like bridged that gap of getting through a tough time for them. And another one said, you know, because we generated a lot more leads, it's literally changed his business, and that changed his life. And he said, like, I know that sounds like, what was the word he said? It sounds dramatic, but like, it's like the actual like truth of the situation. And it's like those kinds of things. Like, you're right. That's absolutely what drives me. Like, I love all of our clients, but especially the ones that like express that gratitude that we've had great wins with and that we've been working with for years, and like all those things. It's so awesome to see that come full circle and see how that impacts everybody.
It's real stuff. I mean, it really works. And, you know, from going from selling it to using it, I really wish I was able to use it than sell it, because I would have been the number one salesperson at my company. Anyways, guys, that is Brandon Bateman. Brandon, where can they find you if they really want to start implementing this strategy? And maybe they've tried it, maybe they've had some success, but they want to really double down for 23.
Yeah, there's a few things that we can do. So the first one is, if someone just, like, let's just say they're having some success or they want to learn more, or whatever the case is, we will provide an audit for free as part of our like process for seeing, because like we're a little bit picky as a company, right? So we're it's like in a sales situation, like, you know, we're kind of trying to evaluate whoever's coming to us as much as they are wanting to evaluate us. I think it's kind of like the fairness of how the situation should work. We're looking for a partnership, and a lot of agencies, I think, kill their results by just taking on the wrong kinds of companies. So a huge piece of that is we want to dig through all your other stuff. And the really neat thing about this is I do these personally, these audits of all your data. We'll look through all of the data and basically help you understand what's working, what's not. And we end it with an action plan of, if you were to improve this, here's the two things or five things or seven things, it depends on how much stuff we find, that you should improve on this. And we, I just did this with someone. I was in an event this weekend, and they pulled out their phone. I literally looked in 15 seconds on their app and Google Ads, I was able to save them 90% of their budget that they were completely wasting on fraudulent inventory, like we had talked about before.
Yeah.
And it's insane how, you know, how sometimes it's not that you need someone to spend a lot of time working with you. It's that you need somebody who knows which button to press, and they understand the experience to be able to say like what's going to work, what's not. So that audit is a huge value add. If somebody wants that, or just a strategy consultation, let's just say you're not running any ads and you want to kind of go through the process of like figuring out, for my market, what are the best channels, what should my budget be, all that kind of stuff, you can just Google us, Bateman Collective, batemancollective.com, fill out a form on there. It'll take you right to a place where you can schedule a call with us, and you can take it from there. If anybody doesn't really want to talk to us, but they want to listen to us, as you had mentioned before, we do have a podcast. It is called Collective Clicks. And it's basically like the kind of stuff that we talked about here. We just go deep into it, into every little facet of it, and we release a new episode every week. So anybody who wants to kind of keep in the loop there and learn how to make this a better channel for their business, but they're interested in some of the details behind it, that's a great place to go.
Excellent. So much value. So much value specifically to me, which is the most important thing. and I really suggest people give that opportunity, you know, to use that opportunity to meet with you, especially if they've gone down this path and they really want to learn more and they want to work with you and as much as you want to work with them. I believe that would be a beautiful thing. I know you work with some of the bigger players in the industry, so you know that you are reputable and have done this. You know, if you haven't heard them, go to the podcast, He had an unbelievable two podcasts on real estate disruptors with Steve Trang, which was one of my favorite podcasts. So that is it. That is all. Have a great day, everybody. Bye-bye.
This has been another episode of Real Estate Power Play, guiding real estate entrepreneurs to a brighter future. If you liked what you heard, consider subscribing wherever you listen to your podcast, or follow us on YouTube at Real Estate Power Play.